is a rather special episode of Johnny Gould's Jewish State, featuring a competition winner from a primary school who won the chance to make an episode with me. All because I'm encouraging the next generation to think seriously about journalism and storytelling, and not just to take in the TikTokers and the YouTubers. Awareness of news and current affairs is certainly heightened by the pressure of social media and us parents' engagement with the news itself. And so imagine a young person growing up in this day and age. And so if more children are engaged by the everything is political zeitgeist, which today's news seems to exist in, much more invasive than when we were young, it's time this long-in-the-tooth journalist put something back to encourage high-minded journalistic inquiry in the next generation, to show that the heavy lifting of real journalism is as fundamental to our democracy and freedoms as ever. So I ran a competition for the pupils of Year 6 at Northwest London Jewish Day School, and I said to the class, get me an interesting interviewee and write down the questions that you'd like to ask them. And so I was delighted that 11-year-old Maya Amit stepped up to the plate and secured time with the chief rabbi, Ephraim Mervis, who invited us to his home. This episode is also presented in loving memory of the late Johnny Zucker, a born educator, children's author, and primary school teacher who also trained as a radio journalist. His mission was encouraging children to read and read and read. He visited school after school, library after library, which is why I'm so grateful that this episode is also supported by Lemon Soul, a publishing house from multi-award-winning edtech company, Too Simple. And Maya and I conducted the interview in his splendid library, which also has its own ark and Sefer Torah. Here is the chief rabbi, Ephraim Mervis, in conversation with Maya Amit.
So it's going to be a good interview.
Last September was your 10th anniversary as chief rabbi. Did you always want to be chief rabbi, and is it how you always imagined it would be?
So first of all, Maya, lovely to have you in my home, and congratulations on winning the competition. And it's my enormous pleasure to welcome you here and to answer your questions. So thank you for reminding me of the very special service which took place on the 1st of September 2013 in St. John's Wood Synagogue, which was my installation as chief rabbi. I'm exceptionally honored and privileged to hold this position. Is it exactly as I thought it would be? Well, actually, I didn't know totally how it would be. But certainly there have been lots of surprises, and Hashem is amazing, and he provides me with these opportunities. I just hope that I will benefit from the constant blessing from Hashem in everything that I strive to do for and on behalf of Jewish people.
What would have been the security impact since October the 7th?
So it's very sad that there is a requirement for security for the Jewish community. And we're blessed to be living in a country where the fight against anti-Semitism is led from the government down. It's not left up to the Jewish community alone to deal with this threat. And we're blessed that provision is provided for the security of our community. And more recently, there has been a need for stronger security. But overall, let's not forget, it's lovely to be Jewish in Britain today. And we're blessed in so many ways. And we should take full advantage of all the outstanding opportunities that are presented to us.
Yes.
I think that's a really important message to deliver to the Jewish community here in the UK, across the Commonwealth and around the world. Chief Rabbi, for those people among us who are scared about the future, worried about our young children and whether we can stay here and live here, some of us who've been here, because British Jews are rather unique in Europe, that have been here for many generations, because the Holocaust didn't impact Britain in the same way as it impacted most other European countries, that this message that you hold today for us is something that people need to hear.
So anti-Semitism is a sad reality of what exists in the world around us. And certainly we should be ever mindful of the blessings that we have in this country and the opportunities that we as Jewish people who are proud British citizens always have. So let's focus on the pleasurable aspects of life today, of which there are many, many. And at the same time, we need to take the challenges that face us seriously.
When I applied for my school's podcast competition last year, the coronation hadn't happened yet. I would love to know what it was like to stay in the palace for Shabbat and how it felt to have such a special role after the coronation service as the king left Westminster Abbey.
So thanks, Maya. That was such a special occasion. And I was mindful of the fact that any honour that was given to me was not given to me personally, but I was representing the Jewish community of Britain and the Commonwealth. We're blessed to have a monarch who genuinely respects all faiths, and he went out of his way at a personal level to guarantee that my wife Valerie and I would be looked after over Shabbat, and that I would be able to walk to the coronation given our Shabbat laws. He was also insistent that I should have a role in the coronation, and I'm so pleased that we found a halachically acceptable role for me to have. Of course, it is unusual for a chief rabbi to enter into a church, but seeing as the invitation was extended by the king, and the actual wording is that the monarch commands a person to attend, then in terms of Jewish law, it was the right thing for me to do. And I think that all Jewish people can be exceptionally proud and gratified that our Shabbat laws were respected. And there was that beautiful moment in the recording, which I saw after Shabbat, when the king stood before six faith leaders, and I was privileged to be one of them. And then the commentary said, "You cannot hear what is being said in the blessing to the king, because it is the Jewish Sabbath, and the chief rabbi is not allowed to use a microphone." And that was broadcast to hundreds of millions of people around the world at the time. So I was fortunate to be part of this Kiddush Hashem and to spread a positive message about the authenticity of Jewish law and its relevance today. And a lesson that I impart often to young people like yourselves is that the more we respect our Jewish faith, the more other people will respect us.
As chief rabbi, you must have traveled to many different places in the UK and abroad. Do you have a favorite?
My favorite's Israel, without any doubt, because Israel is not just the geopolitical center of the Jewish people, it is the heart of Jewish faith. And always has been. It's the essence of our Jewish religious way of life. But I love going everywhere. God's got an amazing planet here for us. And I love people, and I love meeting communities and representing our Jewish world to others, and meeting inspirational people all the time. So, every place is just amazing.
That's kind of funny, because my next question is, of all the people you have met in your life, who has been your biggest inspiration?
I have a very clear answer. The biggest inspiration comes from people who are not household names. My biggest inspiration comes from people who've had difficulties, who've had challenges, and through their challenges have managed to cope and to inspire others. So I'll give you one example. At school, I had a teacher, and his name was Chazan Immerman. He was a chazan in a shul. And why was he such an inspiration? He was the main bar mitzvah teacher in Cape Town, where I grew up, but he was blind from birth. And despite being blind, he gave more light to people's lives than anybody I know. He was a brilliant man, and he just learnt the Torah and learnt all the Haftarahs off by heart. And he knew the Siddur and the Machzor by heart. And the way that he was smiling all the time, and he just was jolly, and he made the most of his life. A person such as that gives one far more inspiration than the people who are on the covers of glossy magazines.
Do you think about him every day?
No.
That's so funny, but I can't put it in. That is so funny.
Okay.
That's the best outtake I think I've ever had. Yes, I think about him every day, and like especially in moments of contemplation. Not every day, but a lot. And okay. I'm glad we had that moment.
All right.
Carry on.
Please.
That was great. Well, one thing we guaranteed from the Chief Rabbi is you get honesty. Okay? That's the one thing we're guaranteed of. What is the most controversial edict or law that you've had to confront in your time as Chief Rabbi?
Many. there have been... I think you cannot avoid controversy. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who lived from 1810 to 1883, for whom I have the highest regard, he used to say, if you are a rabbi and everybody loves you, you're not a rabbi. And if you're a rabbi and nobody loves you, then you're not a mensch.
Are you playing catch-up with Johnny Gould's Jewish State? I've had the pleasure of some really great guests. How about Douglas Murray?
Israel is a rare country in the West in that it does buck many of the trends. I mean, there isn't a fertility rate problem in Israel, for instance, as there is in most European countries. There is a strong feeling of nationhood and of the debts that the country needs to call upon in order to unite its people.
And Hillel Neuer, whose UN Watch keeps check on the excesses and mission creep of the UN human rights in Geneva.
The challenges are great. They're not going away. I am concerned by the cultural revolution that we've experienced in America in the past 5 years, known to some as the woke revolution, where there's a kind of a McCarthyism. If you say something, it could be canceled and fired from your university, from your corporation, from a journalist. And often it's an anti-liberalism. So that, to be honest, really, really scares me, because we need our democracies to be healthy, to be honest, to be truth tellers. So I am deeply concerned.
If you like Johnny's regular podcasts, think about making a donation at either patreon.com/Johnny Gould or buy him a coffee. He loves coffee. ko-fi.com/Johnny Gould.
At the end of the day, you're treading on eggshells, because if you're trying to make every single person happy all the time, you're not a true leader. By the way, you should try your best not to upset people. A very important lesson for me is the verse from Mishle, which we recite in our benching, V'nimtzachem esechel tov b'nei Elokim v'adam. Let us find grace and favor in the eyes of God and people, in that order. First, to be popular in the eyes of God, and thereafter, in the eyes of people. So ultimately, if good leadership includes making an unpopular decision because it is the right thing at that time, that's what one is called upon to do. You asked me for some examples. Oh, many, many, right? It's something which happens all the time. But you know what? I'm not going to give examples, because why should I remind the world of all the things which were controversial? Let's try and prompt people to forget about them and move on with peace for the sake of the future.
I saw that you are the 11th Chief Rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of the Commonwealth. 11 happens to be my favorite number. What's your favorite number and why?
Well, how come is 11 your favorite number?
I'm born on the 11th. 11 is still 11, still 11, still 11.
Right. The 11th of what were you born on?
June.
Really? No, I don't have a lucky number. I think that I have a deep interest in numbers. In gematria, which is the numerical equivalent of letters, dates, significance of numbers. I speak often, you know, you can throw a number at me and I will try my best to explain its roots in Jewish tradition and its relevance today. And Hashem speaks to us often through numbers and their symbolism. And all numbers have the potential to be holy, as long as we utilize every day that we have at our disposal for sacred purposes.
Speaking of the Commonwealth, out of the 56 countries that make up the Commonwealth, do all of them have Jewish communities, and how many of them have you been to?
So the Commonwealth, yes, every Commonwealth country has Jewish residents, Jewish citizens, and then it's a mixed situation. After all, you've got Australia, New Zealand, Canada, you know, which are part of the Commonwealth. And I've been blessed with my wife to visit these countries on pastoral visits, and also India, Cyprus, and other countries. It's interesting, you know, the Republic of Cyprus is part of the Commonwealth. And then there are many African countries which are part of the Commonwealth, and the Caribbean countries, and I was privileged to be invited by Her Late Majesty the Queen to meet with all the heads of state of the Commonwealth at what was called CHOGM, Commonwealth Health Heads of Government Meeting, which takes place every 2 years. So it's mixed. Some Commonwealth countries have powerful, strong Jewish communities, and some have weak Jewish communities. But what inspires me always is to see the commitment of people. And often what I notice in Commonwealth countries, and also in some communities outside of major metropolitan centers, is that the smaller a community, the more committed people are, because they have to try their utmost to keep Jewish life going, to come to shul, and to maintain a Jewish presence. And I'm always so inspired by such people who go out of their way to guarantee the continuity of Jewish faith.
I remember that you visited Northwest a few years ago and told us a story in assembly about your lucky strings and being proud to be a Jew, which we all enjoyed. I am now in secondary school and approaching my bat mitzvah. If there was one message you could give every Jewish child my age, what would it be?
Oh, I've got lots and lots of messages. And you mentioned one of the messages, which is, we should be proud to be Jewish, right? But if there's another message I would convey, it is, let's try our best to have joy. You know, Ivdu et Hashem besimcha. That is a very important verse. Serve Hashem with joy. The Torah is the greatest source of joy and happiness in the world. Keeping our precious mitzvot provides us with a gateway to a life of meaning, of fulfillment, and of happiness. To the extent that even through the great challenges of life, and there are many, and you can't escape them, it's thanks to our observance of Torah law that Hashem's ways inspire us so that we can cope well and we can get through life in a constructive and secure way. So let's be happy, right? And let's make the moment. Let's make the most of all of our opportunities. What I like to say is, let's count our blessings and let's make our blessings count.
I was always amazed that the figure 11, is there have only been 11 chief rabbis in all the time that there have been rabbis, which grew out of Bevis Marx, if I'm correct. And that continuity of the chief rabbi role, how has it changed through the centuries? I mean, we are absolutely blessed with a quite extraordinary continuity in this country that hasn't been disrupted in the same way as it was, for example, in Poland or Germany.
So while we refer to the fact that I'm the 11th chief rabbi, strictly speaking, in 1704, the holder of the office was called the rabbi of the Great Synagogue of London. And that applied to the first four incumbents. From 1845 onwards, the incumbent was called chief rabbi of the British Empire. And that, in the course of time, changed to become chief rabbi of Britain and the Commonwealth. So the role has changed and has developed, but it is extraordinary that there have been so few holders, and Hashem obviously has blessed my predecessors with long and healthy lives.
It's wonderful. I wanted to ask, you know, one of the things that I enjoy so much about being Jewish is how flat society is. You know, the reason why the Jews have a reputation for being disputatious is because I think our society is flat. We're not top down. We're not hierarchical in that respect. So when you walk into a shul, it could be a lord or a pauper, but he's still wearing a talus and a koppel. He looks exactly the same whoever he might be. And so I'm asking, how hierarchical is the role of chief rabbi? Is it not at all? Or is it designed to perhaps meet the secular needs of an establishment around you?
It's highly hierarchical. It's just the nature of the position. It's the Anglo-Jewish way of doing things. So, for example, within the United Synagogue, by the way, I'm chief rabbi beyond the United Synagogue, but if you take the United Synagogue as an example, there is only one ultimate religious authority, and that's the chief rabbi, in the same way as there's only one president. And each synagogue is the local branch of the umbrella organization. And in the protocols and the constitutions of those synagogues which are members, it's the chief rabbi who has the last word on religious matters. And that pertains to the many schools which come under my authority and many other aspects of what we do. My own style is to provide as much freedom of expression and opportunity as possible to our local rabbis and communities. And that is the spirit in which we are operating.
Why is your office symbol the tree, the big tree?
That's a great question. So when I became chief rabbi, I chose as the symbol of my chief rabbinate the verse Eitz Chaim Hi L'Machazikim Ba. It is a tree of life for those who grasp it, and those who support it are rendered happy. And that is a reference to Torah, because Torah is the greatest source of a meaningful life and existence for us, and that includes our commitment to Torah study and to the observance of Torah. So that's why the tree of life, the Eitz Chaim, which is the Torah, that's the symbol, not just of my chief rabbinate, it's the symbol of our Judaism.
May I ask sure. A couple of questions now, Chief Rabbi? Where your from Kite began, where your traveling, where your life started as a rabbi was in the study of Torah. Now, 10 years on, or longer than 10 years on, the administrative and management role that you have, how far does that take you away in terms of leadership, away from perhaps where you started?
So it's a great question, because every rabbi, every teacher, every educator has a similar challenge, because it is so critically important for us to continue studying. The greatest compliment you can give to an outstanding scholar is to say, wow, what a Talmid Chacham that person is. Talmid Chacham means a wise student. The greatest rabbi in the world is a Talmid Chacham, because we are students And the more we know, the more we discover how much more there is to know. And that's why we always must create formal opportunities for Torah study. So yes, it's a challenge. And however busy we are, we need to have what we call kfiyot, which is a commitment to Torah study. And I'm in awe of so many thousands of people around the world who find the time, as busy as they are, to commit to Torah study. And through that, they are rooted in our tradition and in the values that make us Jewish and make us proud to be Jewish.
I've lived long enough now to have experienced a great deal of changes, even in my time of Jewish identity, from the overwhelming, I think, Ashkenazi tradition of where I grew up in Birmingham, to something new, which is more engaged with the Sephardi community, which has converged into London, with, I think, the dominance, perhaps, of Ivrit on the Jewish study. Have you found that there's been an impact on the way that you have led your Jewish life, from perhaps where you grew up in Cape Town to where you are now in the 21st century in London?
So minhag is really important, and that relates to one's family minhag, the minhag, the custom of one's community, of one's roots. And we're blessed as a people to have so many different minhagim. And it's really important that we should respect the minhagim of other people and strive to remain true to them. All of this, of course, needs to be within reason, because minhag is not as strong as a mitzvah. And sometimes, for the sake of, let's say, shalom bayit, getting on well within a family, here or there, one needs to compromise, and because you could have a conflict of minhagim, a tension between minhagim. And then the obvious way forward is, well, let's just get on well together, right? And let's live in a menshidik and sensitive and compassionate way towards others. And interestingly, there are lots of halachot relating to which minhagim should be followed and which shouldn't be followed. So some people after meat wait for 1 hour, those are Dutch Jews, some 3 hours, some 6 hours. What happens if you have a Dutch person marrying, an American? So how many hours do the halakha caters for all of these circumstances and how you go about things. But the most important thing of all is, let's be decent, let's be good, and let's prioritize what is really important in life.
Chief Rabbi, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Indeed. And Maya, thank you very much.
Maya, brilliant questions. Lovely to spend time with you. And I wish you bracha v'atzlacha, blessing and success in all of your studies.
Thank you.
How lovely was that? Thank you very much.
With thanks to the Chief Rabbi, Ephraim Mervis, for giving us his valuable time at his home. To competition winner Maya Amit and Mum Raquel. To Miss Kaplan and Mr. Adamski at Northwest London Jewish Day School. And to Nigel Cannon and all at Lemon Soul, in memory of the late great Johnny Zucker. Johnny, I hope you'd be proud of this educational initiative.